just what makes that little old ant think he'll move that rubber tree plant? Anyone knows an ant can't move a rubber tree plant.
But he's got high hopes. He's got high hopes. He's got high apple pie in the sky hopes.
So anytime you're getting low, instead of letting go, just remember that ant. Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant. Silly old ram thought he'd punch a hole in a dam. No one could make that ram scram. He kept butting that dam, 'cause he had high hopes. He had high hopes.
Come fly with me. Let's fly. Let's fly.
Welcome and blessing, ladies and gentlemen, to those with eyes and ears. This is the gathering offering, and this is the eighth week of this little 26-week adventure. And today is February 25th, 2010, in pagan time. According to the Lord's time, this is the 111th Jubilee, the third week, the fourth year, and the 12th month. And today is the 24th day of the 12th month. At the beginning of this little adventure, it is always my responsibility and duty to say and have some words and some thoughts with the Father in heaven and his only begotten Son. So I shall begin my responsibility and duty. Our Father who art in heaven, I praise you and I bless you as I praise and bless your only begotten Son. Father, I pray that it be thy will for your only begotten Son, the Christ, to pray my prayer to you today. Father, my blessings are immense. There are no words that I can thank you for my blessings. The main way that I learn about my blessings is when you put a burden on me. When you test me, when you push me, when you put me up against the wall. Because that way, Father, even though I sort of scream and I cry when I first see my burden, if I overcome my burden, I now have gained some courage. I know that I have been tested, maybe not so big, maybe so big sometimes. And Father, I pray that each of your children that have eyes and ears welcome their burdens and relish their victories when they overcome their burdens. Thank you so much, Father. And as always, it will be your will that is done and not just my thoughts or my words. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're starting the eighth week of this 26-week adventure or course or offering, and it's flying by kind of fast on me, about 30% gone, 30% gone. And I realize that many people are really biting at the bit to want to get into all kinds of subjects. I am going to be doing my very best to bring forth quite a number of subjects in great detail. And constantly I try to indicate to people, please be patient. Please become eyes wide. There's no way that I can visit with dozens and dozens of people every week and go over individually with each individual their particular circumstances. Now, I wish I was big enough and strong enough and all that I could just, you know, talk to 1,000 people a week and go to work for all of them, but I'm just one man. And I'm not doing all that good of a job, I realize that. Because if I'd been doing a good job, we wouldn't be in this kind of problem. And we wouldn't be in this kind of problem or condition that we're in this world if you were doing a good job. We each must take individual responsibility for the state of manure condition that this world is in. And we must rectify this. We do not rectify this by thinking about it. We do not rectify this by being spiritual. No, we go out and we stand and we offer an example of courage to our other brothers and sisters. And we look the Canaanites in the eye and we tell them, we are under the Father's jurisdiction and His only begotten Son. It then becomes our methodology of how we go about it. Some people want to be involved in tremendous amounts of procedures. Some people want to do something like some individual that is on another network on Sunday evening that has gone out and telling everybody, well, there's a high-ranking military leader. Now, to me, a high-ranking military leader would at least have to have a one-star, brig general at least, and he's confiding about plans of treason against the United States to a radio host? I have a little concern about that. But more than that, I have a little concern about the fact that this individual is asking people to put their names and their addresses and their phone numbers down so that they can be gathered in under the Patriot Act. Now, I hope this individual that is trying to lead another wigged operation will come to his senses and get people to understand that the way we do things is, yes, we stand up, we acknowledge who we are. We don't sign up on a list. When it comes time to the time, we'll show up. We don't need to have a list. That's what the government does. And you put your name on a list and somebody puts it on their computer, and then what happens to you? Oh, golly gee, you know, somebody learned how to hack a computer. Wow. You mean there's not a back door to every single computer that's existing in the world? Think. They sure as heck wouldn't make a computer that they couldn't access. I don't care what kind of privacy codes and antivirus and all this garbage that they try and sell you. They can access anything. These guys are wizards. Never underestimate your opposition. When the time comes, those that have courage, those that want to go forth because their master has ordered them to go forth, their master, the Christ, they'll know the time, and they'll show up. And I don't have to worry about if somehow they've taken my gun and my knife, if the Lord still has some rocks and sticks on the planet, I'll show up. And that's all we have to understand. We'll show up. We don't have to have our name on a list. Come on, folks, let's wake up. Let's call this guy on Sundays and say, hey, why don't you get back to having a little common sense, sir? I don't know of anybody that's spoken out against this. And I've had two or three or four other people that are of notoriety, if you will, on the air talk to me about this. And everybody's afraid of upsetting somebody else. I don't give a damn. If somebody, I don't care who they are, is incorrect, we need to speak up. We need to correct them. They need our assistance. So, I'm sure that a lot of you folks can figure out what's going on. Maybe you'll make a phone call or two this Sunday evening. Let's stop the stupidity. We'll show up when it's time to show up. We don't need to put our names on a list. Okay, now, as a little advanced information, the first day of the year is this next coming Friday from noon to Saturday at noon. This will be known as March 5th, 2010, Pagan Time. The actual last day of the year is March 4th. You may look on your calendar. If you look in history, and you only have to move back about 75 or 80 years and go into an older dictionary, it will tell you that the last day of the year is spring equinox. Oh, everybody says, wait a minute, I'm looking on this calendar here, and, you know, spring equinox is like 12, 13, 14 days later after March 4th. Okay, well, hold that thought. When you wonder about what the last day of the year is, it would allow you to then know what the first day of the year is. So it's important of knowing what the last day of the year is. Did you know what's in your King James Bible? It says last day of the year. Now, if you want to do a diligent search, even in Strongstein's exhaustive concordance, you will come up with a word named tekiphuat. And it'll tell you, spring equinox. It's not January 1st. Now, what's the problem of trying to figure out, well, golly gee, hey, this guy, he's, you know, on the side of a mountain in Arkansas, and a rock must have split off and hit him in the head. Well, when you learn how to measure time correctly, folks, and you'll have the opportunity, if you want to, learn how to determine when noon is, and get out there and watch the sun set on the western horizon. Now, at my location, I've been doing this for 11 years, and I will admit the first 2 years, my accuracy was not quite satisfactory. I was having a spread sometimes of 90 seconds on one side and sometimes, you know, 75 seconds on the other side. But I kept working on my measurements of how to measure noon. And golly gee, I learned that noon happens in this particular location at 12:17. And then a few years after that, another man who had a computer, he looked it up on something called Google or something, and right exactly in my area, noon is 12:17. I was kind of happy that I was unhappy for the first couple of years, and I was happy that I was unhappy with myself, because I kept working and working, and golly, I got it down to 12:17, exactly what everybody else said. But that was cool. And I wasn't using all the fancy tools that people use. I just took some scrap aluminum and put it together and built one of the walls of Jerusalem. Build a wall of Jerusalem? How could you do that? You know, just some scrap aluminum. Well, all the walls of Jerusalem are north and south. Two of them are north and south. Two of them are east and west. And all you have to do is create a gate, a city gate. And when you get it aligned perfectly north and south, guess what happens? You determine when noon is. Anyway, I've been doing it. And as we proceed in this little adventure, I hope to be able to go into more of that. But I wanted you just to know that coming up to the first day of the year. And that actually is one of the required 91 Sabbaths in common vernacular. Or more properly, it's known as one of the 91 appointed times required for us not to do manual labor, required for us not to buy and sell, required for us to eat the proper items like no leavened bread on those days, required for us not to have conjugal relations with our spouses. Anyway, today we are going to be starting part A of chapter 5. Chapter 5 is entitled The World of Slavery and Voluntary Servitude. And voluntary servitude. Did you volunteer? Are you not happy? The rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. Proverbs 22:7. And thou shalt not borrow. Deuteronomy 28:12. The wicked have drawn out the sword and have bent their bow to cast down the poor and the needy and to slay such as be of upright conversion. Psalms 37:14. If you owe money to somebody, as in Proverbs 22:7, then you are their servant. Having a problem with the bank? Having a problem with the United States federal government? Having a problem with your individual state? How much money do you owe? Did you know you owe money? Did you know you owe your state money? Most people kind of figure out they owe the federal government money because most people want to go out there and, you know, give them money. It's called tribute. As a repeat, a part of Deuteronomy 28:12, and thou shalt not borrow. You know, you can actually find this a whole bunch of times in the Father's Laws. The Father's Laws are what I call the game plan book. And your plays are in there. And when you study that game plan, you are then able to comply where the Christ tells us in the so-called New Testament. I call it the reaffirmation of the Old Testament. He says, and thou shalt handle serpents. That's pretty cool. Not like them folks in backwoods, you know, Virginia and Kentucky, God bless them, you know, that pick up rattlesnakes and moccasins and let them bite them and then get their arms deformed or die, have their fingers fall off. No, you got to use the game plan book. And our opposition as the serpent is very wise. And when you underestimate your opposition, that's how you get your little fanny in a sling. The way that we figure out our opposition is by inspecting their fruits. The way we figure out who are our friends, our brothers and sisters with eyes and ears, is by inspecting their fruits. But when you, any time in life, if you are in an adversarial position and you underestimate your adversary, you're going to get your fanny whooped. Now, I underestimate a chigger out here in the Arkansas woods in summer and fall, and you're going to know what I'm talking about. I think the chigger's about the toughest thing there is in the woods out here. And, you know, I'm really not too concerned about anything else. Well, some things I can deal with. Them little chiggers, they get around your belt and in your crotch. Whoo! You know what I'm talking about, powerful opposition. Get into a whole nest of them. That happened to me one time. All right, part A, neither slavery nor involuntary servitude. That's Amendment 13 of the United States Constitution. Did you know you volunteered? Most people think, well, you got to go into the Army to volunteer. No, you can volunteer. Did you know that approximately 99% of the United States have volunteered? Did your high school teacher in your civics class tell you about it? Does your preacher stand up and in front of your congregation and say, look, did you know you volunteered for the corporate government? I don't think so. Now, the way we got into this is by, in mass, how we got into this, is by the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution. There's been dozens and dozens of books of individuals that have written about the impropriety, illegality, fraud, etc., about the 14th Amendment. Now, if you don't know, it's stupid to be, you know, that the 14th Amendment is a criminal, fraudulent thing. I'm not sure you should be listening in right now. And I don't think there's any use in beating up a dead horse. It's criminal. It's fraudulent, the fraud that was perpetrated upon us. But you got to learn how to get out of it. To learn how to get out of it, you got to learn how you got in it. So we're going to do a little bit of that today, if we can. First of all, the Constitution of the United States of America, circa 1787, and United States Constitution, circa 1881. Did you hear I said two different constitutions? Two different dates? Those corporations were registered in London, England, at just about those dates. An individual that knows how to do a little research, all they have to do is submit a requirement as to searching out for the corporate charters of registration in London, England. It's not really that hard. It just takes a few months. Okay, you got two different names of these corporations. And they're in Great Britain. Did anybody actually think that we won the Revolutionary War? Did you really think that the, you know, King George, the King of England, who was also the King of France, Didn't you think it was a little suspicious the France was sending, you know, the revolutionary guys some money and sending them, you know, some ships at the right time? Do you really think that the largest army of the world that had kicked tail, take names, and dumped on everybody could lose against our true patriot founding fathers, of which on my mother's side, our family, our very first family relative that came to this country, he fought the entire war, and he rose to a rank of major. And Washington, at a later date, after they, you know, got finished with the Articles of Confederation, they just dumped them. They tried to get Francis Slay, that was my relative, to become a colonel. He said, no. Francis said, I'm going to fight against you in the Whiskey Rebellion. I'm going to try and kill you, George Washington, and the rest of you criminal Masonic Lodge guys that have, you know, taken our blood and our maiming of our men that fought to stop the King of England. And you did us in a back room. Well, Francis and everybody else kind of learned the hard way. The pen is mightier than the sword. They get individuals that don't know what a word means, and they tell them it's something else. And they debase the language. And the poor individual says, well, that's legalese. Well, yeah, it is. It's called the power of the pen. Being more mightier than the sword. People constantly get mad at me. Well, Jerry, you nitpick. You're into details. Well, let me tell you, folks, the way you win in a court in this country and in the court of judgment of the only begotten Son of the Father, the Christ, the Lamb of God, when he's standing there as judge, jury, and executioner, you're going to win on points. But, you know, if judgment was right now, today, at this second, and I was brought up in front of the Lamb of God, and if he were to ask me a question, as to say, jury, give me one reason why I should allow you to come into the kingdom, I would have to stand mute. I haven't got one good reason. I'm hoping through the whatever is left in my life to come up with one thing that say, Lord, I did one thing. One thing that was good. And you know what? If I come up with that one good thing in my mind that I think would qualify before I take my last breath, I have demonstrated arrogance. Because we must continue. And we must continue. And any man that says, oh, I did this great thing and I did that great thing, I'm an expert, it demonstrated arrogance. And that's not the way it's done. We're constantly searching for the one good thing. And we never pat ourselves on the back as far as it being in the eyes of the Lord. You ever read in Ezekiel? To the righteous that is righteous all the time, but at the very end turns to wickedness, then all of his righteousness shall count for naught. Did you also read where the wicked that are wicked all the time, but at the very end turn to righteousness, that their wickedness shall count for naught? So we actually have a master that he's watching you to the last second. And he's analyzing you. He's the judge, the jury, and the executioner. And even as stupid as I was yesterday, I have the ability to be smarter tomorrow. And so do you. And we can all always do better. There's not a single thing that I've ever done in my life that I'm satisfied with. Oh, yeah, well, I got a B plus on that. I got an A minus on that. But I wasn't good enough. And even if I got 100 on a test, that's not good enough, because if I did, probably they didn't have a tough enough test. Push ourselves, ladies and gentlemen. Push ourselves. And that's what we're going to be getting into the second half of this little adventure today. We're going to start stretching our minds a little bit on this 14th Amendment and how we got into it. And yes, I try to take a little bit of time and motivate you. Because if you're not motivated, how are you going to go out there and get in the mud and the blood? And you got to find it inside you. And if you got it in you, you can bring it out. And when you bring it out, you'll be bringing it out to your brothers and sisters with eyes and ears. And that's what life's about, is helping your brothers and your sisters. And at the same time, we go out there, and even there's these elected officials, we try to give them assistance. Because maybe one out of 1,000 of them might turn around and say, you know what, I'm doing something wrong. And we keep the chip off our shoulder. And we always exhibit the demeanor of a lady and a gentleman. And I'm sure you've seen plenty of people that go in and they yell and they scream and they just got this surly attitude when they're, you know, up against their adversary. Not me. I'm smiling at them. I enjoy dealing against my adversary, because if they are truly my adversary, I know I'm going to whoop them. And I'm going to humble them. But if they're really one of my bad adversaries, I'm going to humiliate them. And that's what you do to them Canaanites. Humiliate them in public. Grab the buzzards by the throat. Look them in the eye. And prove that they're a liar. And they'll act just like a cockroach to run back into the cracks of the wall. Into the darkness where they belong. Shine the light of the Lord on them. And gain your courage and gain your strength. Now, I'm sitting here stretching right now trying to come up with a couple words because I don't know exactly how many minutes I got left. I just start visiting with folks, but we got to, you know, think about these ways that First Amendment gets away to pay their bills and stuff. And so I'm stretching trying to figure out how I can, you know, stretch another 30 or 60 seconds into, you know, when is the music coming? I don't know. I'm not a celebrity on radio. I'm just the guy that's getting out here giving it a try. So if I don't sound like a professional, because I'm not. I'm probably not too much different than any of y'all. Except maybe I just may be a little uglier. I've been cracking mirrors for a long time and arguing about the fact that these people keep making cheap mirrors. I try never to look in my mirror more than once a day. Otherwise, they seem to crack on me. So anyway, I'm again stretching here because I haven't heard any music or anything, and I don't know what's going on in my clock right here. But anyway, we're going to try and get back into this 14th Amendment after the bottom of the half hour, and we're going to talk about the bankruptcy. We're going to talk about when the bankruptcy was, because everybody in this country, when I listen on the radio, when I talk to people, they abundantly assure me that the bankruptcy occurred in the United States in 1938. And it did not. It absolutely did not happen in 1938. I mean, the bankruptcy was accepted in 1938, but the bankruptcy was not in 1933. And yet everybody tells me the bankruptcy was in 1933.
My
clock's a little behind. Be back after the station break. Thank
Oops,
you so much, ladies.
There goes another problem, kerplop.
Oops, there goes another problem, kerplop.
Hear it first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net, around the world and on satellite. Since the beginning of time, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it, it has been traded, it has been borrowed, it has been purchased, it has been stolen, there's a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty, to ourselves and to our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188 or visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, and regular guest, world-renowned economist Robert Chapman, right here on FirstAmendmentRadio.com at 4 p.m. Eastern or 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, 1-800-375-4188.
Hi, Nicholas here. I used to lug those big jugs to the market to fill with water from those coin-operated filter machines, 25 cents a gallon or 5 gallons for a buck. I used to. Then I got the big Berkey. Now I save my back and hundreds of dollars, too. I was paying $600 for the same 3,000 gallons of water that a pair of black Berkey filters will provide from my own tap for only $99. This means that your Berkey water system will entirely pay for itself with only 1,500 gallons of use, and then you will still have 1,500 gallons left before you need to replace the filters. Do the math. Stop throwing your money away on bottled water and filter dispensers that may or may not be delivering as promised. For a limited time, First Amendment Radio is offering 10% off on the most popular Berkey water systems. Visit the shopping page at firstamendmentradio.com or call us at 559-781-3773 for more information. Leave your name and address and we'll send you this special offer. Do it now. First Amendment Radio is an authorized distributor of Berkey products.
Now listen to me. The Bible says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. I want you to know that a corporation is Caesar.
Government takeover of the church. This DVD is the most powerful tool we have for waking up those asleep in the pews. The scripture calls for his people to come out of her. The corporate church is the apostate church, the whore that rides the beast. Get this DVD for a donation of $25 from firstamendmentradio.com. Make copies and give them away to your corporate churched friends and loved ones. The truth will make them free. They will watch the DVD, Government Takeover of the Church. Order online today at firstamendmentradio.com or call 559-781-3773. Who will tell them if not you?
Once I get you up there where the air is rarefied, we'll just glide starry-eyed. Once I get you up there, I'll be holding you so very near, you might even hear a whole gang of cheers just because we're together. Weather-wise, it's such a cuckoo day. You just say those words and we'll take our birds down to Acapulco Bay. It's so perfect for a flying honeymoon. Oh, babe, come fly with me. Let's fly, let's fly. Pack up, let's fly away.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the second half of the eighth week of this 26-week little adventure to the Gathering Offering. My name is Jerry Kirk, and I have been negligent again. I forgot to say thank you to the Morning Liberty Show and RJ for allowing me to come on for 2 hours yesterday morning from 7 to 9, and that was not proper on my behalf, and I apologize, RJ. I apologize to the listeners. And RJ has said that in two more Wednesdays, I'll be coming on again, and we're going to get a little deeper. This past Wednesday was just a little bit of an introduction about me, or the way he wanted to get into it, some of the history of my life. And I hope that people will maybe go to the archives of RBN and listen to yesterday's program of the Morning Liberty Show. So I apologize for forgetting to get that at the top of the hour. That was not good on my behalf, and, you know, I'm not perfect. All right, we're getting back to the 14th Amendment. The individuals that tell you that the bankruptcy of the United States happened in 1933 are misleading you in more than one sense. The acceptance of the bankruptcy was in 1938. The bankruptcy court is in Puerto Rico. Only people with certain credentials can go down there. They have a meeting every 2 years and they have a meeting every 4 years. The bankruptcy has never ended. the bankruptcy court tells Congress exactly what legislation to pass or what legislation to repeal. Of course, I've never heard of them repeal legislation. My pappy always told me the way to have good government is every time a legislative body passes a bill, force them to repeal two. You know, pass one, get rid of two. He said eventually you'll get good government. And that's about, you know, the truth of the matter. Those idiots get up there and pass thousands every year. No one can keep up with them. No one can understand them. Okay. Now, the bankruptcy court is the dictators, the black robes there are the dictators of what Congress has to do because we're still in bankruptcy. You don't think this is true? Check it out. You'll find out that I'm 100% correct. All of the political maneuvering, your elections for this Democrat or that Republican is pure illusion. That is the people that have not woken up. That is for people that have not sat behind the scenes like I did for a period of time in my life and, you know, being there 3 weeks before the government does something and the honcho that, you know, the administrative staff comes in and there's 17, 18 guys there and says, now, look, we need to make sure we get everything right so that the commissioners vote the way that makes you guys happy. There is no government in the sunshine. It's all done back rooms, kid. Wake up. They don't care how you vote. They're going to do what they're going to do. You're in bankruptcy. And what happens to folks is they say, well, potato, potato. And you're nitpicking when you say potato. And everybody wants to speak in their own particular area of the country or their county on a certain type of language. It's called in the local vernacular. In Latin, vernaculus is the word. Vernaculus means home-born slaves, domestic, native, indigenous, and it comes from the word verna, again, a home-born slave. Now, I wonder if Verna came from vermin, or vermin came from Verna. And then in the eyes of the Lord, when you become a corporate individual, you become vermin. Think about that. Okay. In local vernacular, the act in Congress that got everybody into this is called the Buck Act. And, you know, very shortly thereafter, President Truman said, the buck stops here. Boy, he was telling the truth. This is known as the Public Salary Tax Act. It is Title IV, Sections 100 through 113. In very simplistic terms, the Public Salary Tax Act says if you accept a privilege, a gratuity, or a service of the corporate government, you are under their jurisdiction. You're under their rule. You want to know why you're paying income taxes? You want to know remember the Edna Lane Brown episode a few years ago? Made me sick. Show us the law that makes us liable. That's it, right there. Title IV, Sections 100 through 113. How'd you take a privilege, a gratuity, a service? Well, you took a Social Security card. You took a zip code. Became a resident. You're qualified for unemployment. Qualified for this, that, the other. Well, I've never drawn a dime out of Social Security. You got the card. You're paying into it. And the expectation on your behalf to receive benefits at a later date creates the jurisdiction. You went under the Canaanites when you did that. I didn't know it. First time I got a Social Security card, I was 13. I applied for it for myself. And as soon as I got it, I filed my very first income tax statement, and I filed it when I was 13. And I read the whole thing, and I filled it out, and I signed it. Boy, was I smart when I was 13. Well, you were underage, Jerry. You couldn't do that because, you know, you got to be at least 21 at that time. Sorry. I volunteered. When I did turn 21, I did not do anything about it. I still lived under it. Finally got rid of that dadgum thing in 1997. We'll be going into how I got rid of it at a later date. Okay, so that's it in the simplicity of how you have to pay. Now let's read a little bit of the 14th Amendment. All persons born and naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. Now, a little exercise that you want to do is go back to your state house or your state statutes and learn and read when the word resident was introduced. It wasn't there originally. And then all of a sudden the word resident pops up in your statutes. Well, what were you before that? Did you ever think about that? All of a sudden, boom, sort of overnight, over the course of 5-6 years, all the various states now have the word resident. And then they have the word person. Got to go back to the beginning. All right. Did you notice that it says subject to naturalizing the United States? And the United States and the state. It does not say the same language, the Constitution of the United States of America. When you go to the preamble and you read that, you see, hey, Constitution for the United States of America. It doesn't say that anymore. United States Constitution. Changed there. When you come out of your mom's womb, you were born. Your mother birthed you. Only a female of age can birth. A newborn child, male or female, cannot birth. Yet everybody's got a birth certificate. Well, the bankruptcy court said we got to issue birth certificates. That way we can create a bond situation for everybody. And we can have a way to get our money back over the course of that individual's life. You ever think about the fact that the mom is the only one that signs the birth certificate? Did you ever study your opposition, the Canaanites? Did you ever study the way the Canaanites have their mom, the females, in charge of it? Up, am I nitpicking again? When mom was giving birth, was she kind of in an emotional state, maybe happy? Was she maybe drugged? Was she really competent to sign a legal document? Probably not. Okay. Now, in last week, I pointed out to you something called a revocation of residency. And if you go back to the 14th Amendment, you'll see, and a resident, or where the state where they reside, that means resident. Okay? So, 14th Amendment made you a resident, and when you came to your individual state, you became a resident. Now, if you move from Florida to Arkansas, if you don't do something, like do a declaration of inhabitants once you have a permanent location, you automatically become a resident. Very important to go back to last week and check this out. Read your quote. When jurisdiction is not squarely challenged, the subject matter is presumed to exist. Burks, B-U-R-K-E-S. V. Lasker, L-A-S-K-E-R, 441, U.S. Supreme Court, 471. How many times have you ever thought about challenging squarely your 14th Amendment status? Has anybody, told you, you got to do this? You got to challenge it? Do words count on this business? No, they don't count. You got to do something. You want to turn in an affidavit? You get these people for years. We're turning in an affidavit of truth. An affidavit means you're affiliating with them. By the very act of handing an affidavit in, you're granting jurisdiction. But what are these people that are telling you to turn in an affidavit are saying, get under their jurisdiction. You don't do it that way. I hate to work on and talk about the negative things, but, I've watched this for years. And some of them want to turn in an eye to steel. Same thing. Okay, now, going back to the Social Security. In 1933, the Williams case was the very, not Social Security. In 1943, the Williams case was the very first U.S. Supreme Court case which tested the Public Salary Tax Act. And the U.S. Supreme Court said, hey, That's okay. You use the privilege, gratuity of service, that's good. You're not, you know, it's allowable. You're under our jurisdiction. What do you think the black robes in Washington, D.C. were ordered to do? They had to approve it. I've never found a single case ever since that time that has weakened the Public Salary Tax Act of 1939. They just looped it more and more and more and more, weaved you into it more and more under that jurisdiction. About the Social Security, when Social Security first came out, it was called a trust fund. Within 3 years after the so-called passage of Social Security, the government had one of their people come in and sue the government and say, hey, the federal government's not allowed to have a trust fund. U.S. Supreme Court said, of course we're not allowed to have a trust fund. So ever since then, the courts have ordered that all your Social Security money goes paid unrestricted into the general revenue fund. There is no money in Social Security. When they say that Social Security is going broke, they're lying to you. Every year, think about this, folks. Every year, they do some work and pass this bill or what on Social Security. Well, the reason is because Social Security is under the military budget. There's no money there. They're just telling you that at sometime down the road, they're not going to be able to create any more accounting tricks. It's a scam. As a matter of fact, if you really study it, you'll find out that many Social Security numbers have 3 and 4 individuals assigned to the same number. I got that from a computer guy that was doing a massive search and was hired by the Social Security Administration. Millions of dollars of contract. And, you know, he related to this to me in 1985. He says, hey, I was just doing my job. And when I told him, I said, I found the same Social Security number with 3 or 4 different individuals' names attached to the same number. And he said, they fired my company for finding this. And this guy was, you know, had a very small computer operation in Central Florida, and he used to be a really big guy. Okay. So the scam is all-inclusive. You got into it by the 14th Amendment. When you became, and you had a birth certificate, you were now naturalized. Naturalized is a legalese term to say that you were monetized, and you were made into money, and you were made into commerce, and you became a corporate entity in a legal fashion. This is not a straw man. This is not a fiction. This is legal reality. It's legal. It's in paper. Do I think it's correct? No. But it's the reality. No straw man to it. Now, while we're talking about this on the birth certificate, I've heard people say all this, that, and the other about all caps. And I've asked people for 25 years, show me anywhere in the United States Code where it talks about all caps. And I've never had anybody come back and show me a statute, section, code, whatever, that talks about it. And when they can't answer me, I say, well, did you ever go look at the death certificate? It's right there in the United States Code. It says when the flesh of the body is dead, now the name is typed in all caps, and it's typed in all caps on the death certificate. So what they did is they made you dead. You're still breathing air. You'll still bleed if you cut your finger. But you're dead. You have joined the corporation. You have become vermin. You've become vermin. You have become the vernacular of our world. Is this right? Is this correct? No. But it's what we let ourselves get into. I was in it. Not in it anymore. And I'm pretty sure the government understands I'm not in it. Otherwise, I would think they'd be throwing me in jail every week. They don't really want me in the courtroom. They don't want me asking questions. I don't make statements in a courtroom. I ask questions that they don't want to answer or they cannot answer. And I do my homework. I'm not in there to prove that I'm an expert because I'm not an expert. And anybody who says that they're an expert is an idiot. Now, we have something called the Civil Rights Act. And there's a lot of good people that are of color. They want to refer themselves to black folks. And I think that there's folks is the good term. If I happen to be of color, somebody called me black, I'd be upset. I would prefer to be a man of color as opposed to black and being equated to ham. And I think most black folks ought to jump up and get mad about that term. Go back to being a different type of terminology. Quit being misled. Well, the civil rights movement was to make everybody a slave. Civil rights and 14th Amendment give you the minimum. It doesn't talk about the maximum. Every 14th Amendment case says this is the minimum that you get. The way to prove this, and I want to, and I mentioned this last week, and I'm going to go into it a little more. Vernon Lee Bounds, B-O-U-N-D-S, V, Robert Bobby Smith, et al., 430 U.S. 8. 1797, S period, CT period, Supreme Court, 1491, decided April 27th, 1977. It says clearly that under due process and access to the courts that a 14th Amendment citizen is entitled to case law after 1960. You can look in the case and you will see that you're only given certain case law books even. You're not allowed to have them all. Now, if you're in prison and you can't get in due process and access the court, what do you think it is outside? At least prisoners are given a law library. Don't you think it's time to stand up and say, why don't we have a law library for the people that aren't behind bars? How many people have a law, competent law library in their community? Big city, maybe. How many people in the country got a law library, a competent one? I'll bet you less than 50%. Prisoners get a law library, and you don't get any. If you do not get the Vernon Bounds case, if you do not study it, you're not going to learn about the Cruz v. Hawk case. You're not going to learn about the Younger case. They're cited in Cruz v. Hawk. They're critical. When you do not learn how to quit talking in the local vernacular, you become Vernus. If you do not want to quit being a 14th Amendment corporate citizen under the jurisdiction of the serpent children called Canaanites, you are vermin. You must stop being a corporate individual. You must pay off your bills. Take your $10,000 car that you owe $5,000 on, sell it, use $4,000 of it to buy an older car, four-wheel drive, older than 1985, and fix it up. Take the other $1,000 and pay off some of your credit cards. Sell your stuff and get out of debt. You can do without a lot of things that you have in your house, the material things. You can't do without your immortal soul. Get out of debt. Quit being servant to the lender. You got to figure a way, and that's what this course is. I'll be showing more. This is the introduction to 14th Amendment. You got to come out of Babylon. Revelations chapter 18, verse 4. That is an order. Oh, my people, come out of her. Lest you partake of her sins in her place. I know for a fact, Jack, that my master would never give me an order that is impossible for me to do. He never said it'd be a rose garden. But I know that I can do it because he gave me that order and he gave you that order. And if you ignore an order from your master, you're going to pay a penalty. This is what this course is about, or this offering is about. Get on the right side, on the right team. Learn how to do it, pay attention to details, and become dedicated. This isn't about me selling anything, because I don't sell anything. I don't charge anything. And you may not send me a monetary donation. and you may go to freedom-school.com, where another man puts up a website, and he doesn't make anybody pay either. He wouldn't mind it if you sent him 10 cents once a month. At 10 cents once a month, he could actually pay the electric and the server bill. Freedom-school.com. And if you're not reading and studying this material, you're wasting your time. If you're not thinking about this material, you're wasting your time. Go to some bebopper. I'm not into bebop, and I'm not into spreading honey. I'm into telling you we've got to buckle down and get our little asses in gear. Okay? And if you want good results, you're going to buckle down and you're going to become very, very disciplined in all aspects of your life. Now, if you don't want to do that, go to the bebop station. Go turn on the giant reptile, the guy that equates himself to a giant reptile. He gives you all kinds of fear-mongering and emotion every day. He'll talk about 30 items in an hour. That's a good way to go. If you want to buckle down, go get back on this course. Start week one, do week two, week three, week four. It's going to get a little more intensive, and you're going to have a lot more paperwork. There's a lot of material in Chapter 5 that I talked about, if you go read this Part A, that you got to read. You got to read the Vernon Bounce case. You got to go acquire it. There's a lot of paper there. And you know what? I got it the first time I read it, but I've done this a bit. I doubt if most people are going to get it with less than two or three readings. You don't get your case, you don't have Vernon Bounds in your back pocket, you don't have one of your sharpest arrows that should be in your backpack, the arrows of the Lord. This is how you deal with them. And this is how you don't make the mistake of quoting a 1925 case and watching your case go bye-bye out the window. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening in to this gathering offering. I wish that I was able to do a more competent job. I wish that I could compress things quicker, faster. But I think foundation is important. Look forward to having y'all listen in that have eyes and ears next week. Have a very great day today. Would be a crime.
Nice and easy does it. Nice and easy does it. Nice and easy does it every time. Like the man says one more time. Nice and easy.